Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Samādhipacchaya yathābhūtayāna dasanaṃ ti. This evening's talk, I'm going to be discussing more about the arising of insight. Sometimes I get challenged by saying Ajahn Brahm doesn't say anything about insight. But of course, it really depends what type of insight one means. If they really had insight into my teachings, then they would know that there's lots of insight there. The point being that that phrase which I mentioned at the beginning was that seeing things as they truly are, which is the meaning of yatha, as Buddha they are, jnana dasanang, wisdom and seeing, always arises as a result of samadhi. And our problem is that sometimes we try and get insight without samadhi. We try and get insight just through thinking and contemplating things. The reason why that never works for two reasons. One, we haven't got enough information yet, enough data about the experience of consciousness of mind and the body and the senses. And number two, that because of our hindrances, we tend to think in the same old conditioned ways. We can't break through the cycle of delusion, which is a vicious cycle, as you've heard when the Buddha talked about the vipalasas. Once there is a mistaken view there, that will bend your perceptions to fit. And you will build from your perceptions your thoughts, and your thoughts will again reinforce the wrong views. That whole cycle of reinforcing delusion is only broken through the abandoning of those five hindrances, which is a job of samadhi. Seeing things in a way you've never seen before. Which is why that I teach samadhi in this monastery and elsewhere as the power source, the cause of insight. It's not the fact that a person does insight. And you should all know by now that this path is a causal path. Just when you put into place the conditions and nutriments, then these other things, they flower by themselves. And so insight, the Buddha said again and again, seeing things as they truly are, always arises as a result of the calming and stilling of the mind called samadhi. And sometimes people argue, how much quiet do you need? Again, when you get samadhi, you get insight into the answer to that question. It's only when you get those beautiful still states of mind, you understand why that you need a deep degree of samadhi to gain insight. You need the jhanas. Without those jhanas, number one, the mind isn't powerful enough. And number two, you haven't got enough data, enough experience to be able to fully understand what the Buddha meant by these things called anicca, impermanence, or fading away cessation. Or even this beautiful word we've just been chanting in the fire sermon, nibbida. This turning away, this revulsion to the world. It's hard to do that. Sometimes many of you might have, especially those who have just come to this monastery, might have wanted to, okay, let's leave the world aside. I'm coming into a monastery, I'm going to be a monk forever anymore. The world is dead to me. You can say that for a few minutes, but then after a while you start remembering your past and you get, what is it, attracted, charmed by what's outside this monastery. You can't just say, I'm giving up the world. It's not up to your act of will. The causes have to be put into place for nibbida, for this turning away from the world to actually occur. And of course, that is actually seeing things as they truly are, seeing the truth. And it's this natural progression which the Buddha taught about again and again, which is fundamental to understanding what's happening here. Once there's samadhi is attained, It follows automatically that one sees things as they truly are. Once a cause, that is samadhi, is in place, the result, which is wisdom, seeing things as they truly are, insight, has to happen. And when insight happens, if it's true insight, it gives rise to this whole process of turning away from the world, from the body, from the five senses, from everything, and the whole universe fading away and eventually ceasing in Nirodha. That's the path. It's a causal path. So we don't do insight. We create the causes for insight to arise. In the same way, you never do samatha. You never do samadhi. You just create the causes for the calm states to arise, as I've been mentioning throughout the whole of this retreat so far. And the cause from arousing samadhi is abandoning the doer, getting rid of this controller, just letting go, contentment, freeing the mind. But once one has got samadhi, sort of insight happens as a result of that cause called samadhi. So what actually happens? The samadhi you've achieved so far, what does it mean? When we say what it means, is what's its consequence? What does it lead to? First time which I gained any degree of samadhi, it led me into this monastic life. That was its consequence. You can actually see that just from a first experience of a samadhi state as a layperson, straight away that you saw something there, saw something very close to the way things really are, which led to the nibbida of turning away from my lay life, from the world. And that was actually that whole sequence in action there. And each one of you, there's some degree of stillness and peace which you've experienced in your meditation. And that's helped you to turn away from the world. Even if, you know, that's not been very deep, at least it's got you into this monastery and kept you here. You see what's happening here. There's some insight happening. You're seeing something. In the world outside, you can see just how people are attracted to a secondary happiness, that they are whirling around in inferior pursuits. And I can say that without trying to be elitist or proud. It's just the nature of things. That whereas one seeks for happiness in family or in possessions or in fame or whatever in that world, when you actually get a bit of samadhi, you realize that that's not where happiness, where freedom, where peace truly lies. You start to gain some insight, some experience of the Buddha's teaching that whatever the Aryas say is suffering, the world says is happiness. What the world says is suffering, the Aryas say is happiness. It's a powerful teaching because it shows that the enlightened ones and the worldlings have a completely opposite way of understanding happiness and suffering. Whereas the world might say the birth of a child is wonderful, winning the lottery is tremendous, falling in love is so sweet. The Aryas would say something different. They would say the opposite. And so here we have an interesting example of just how each one of you, for some reason or another, you've got enough insight to be able to at least agree with the Aryas. Whereas the world might say living as a monk is suffering, giving up sex is suffering, giving up your choice to do what you want is suffering. Something, some insight has happened that you disagree with that world and you've joined a monastery for at the minimum of a month or 3 months. So there's some insight has happened there. Where has it come from? Because sometimes you've been calm. Calm enough to see that this peace, this stillness, this freedom, this simplicity where many things have vanished is a very beautiful and wonderful thing. It's worthwhile. It's happy. It seems to be pregnant with the taste of full nibbana. It's as if every piece of stillness which you get is almost promising something deeper. the ultimate stillness, the ultimate peace, the ultimate happiness, the ultimate freedom. You can extrapolate to be what the Buddha meant by nibbana, enlightenment. And you suddenly get a taste of it. It's what the Buddha called the taste of Dhamma, the taste of freedom, the taste of stillness. And each one of you, without exception, has had some taste of that. Otherwise you would not be able to turn away from that world and at least come here. And as we develop samadhi, that taste gets stronger and stronger, deeper and deeper, more and more profound, more and more rich. Instead of a taste, it soon becomes a meal. Instead of a meal, it becomes a whole banquet. Instead of a banquet, it becomes your life, the taste of freedom. But it all comes from this states of stillness and peace. Every time that you are still, there's a sense of joy and happiness, as if this is where you belong, that this is where truth can be found. Many of us have studied and have used our brains. But sometimes all that study, all that thinking, where does it lead? Sometimes that you might think studying the Abhidharma, certainly it does lead to Nibbida. But it leads to Nibbida of study. You've had enough of that. But all the thinking, where does it actually lead? It doesn't lead you anywhere. Sometimes you just have headaches. And all the thinking which I've done has not been worth anything. When you've got calm, that's worth so much more. There's an insight which you get that's so valuable. That's where wisdom comes from. That's where truth, where freedom, where compassion, where happiness and joy arise. And the more times one experiences those calm states, even small calm states, let alone the great calm states of jhanas, every time you experience calmness, the mind recognizes that this is where the jewel of liberation is found. This is the right area. This is where I should try and find more time to hang out. You tend to be one who hangs out in solitude rather than hangs out in the mall of thought where ideas are just coming and going, just like the shopping malls in Perth. As one does this, one realizes the beauty of silence and the fact that silence is where just the insights just start arising and growing and developing. The more silent you are, the more you see things as they truly are. You're stopping the whole process of these asavas. These asavas is the movement of the mind which goes out into the world, which goes out into the time, into the future or the past. And it goes out, so it always misses, you know, the source of things. It's like looking out from yourself. You never realize, you can never see your own eyes until you actually turn the attention inwards with the mirror of mindfulness to see what is looking. As one develops the insight of quietness and calmness, it's not just the happiness and peace of just letting go of the busyness and the stress of thinking or doing in its coarser forms. As we let go more and more, things get more and more profound, and one realizes that what stillness truly is the absence of a doer. It's very easy logically to make that connection. When there's a doer which is active, there'll always be restlessness. The cause of restlessness is doing things. You move because you do something to make yourself move. And as that doer becomes abandoned, tranquilized, then you'll find that the movement gets less and less and less. The mind achieves a state of stillness. Of course, that doer is only fully overcome, as I say in second jhana. But even before then, the first jhana, even beforehand, my goodness, there's a lot of peace and stillness there. And that peace and stillness is full of joy. And that's one of the great insights which one gets in this path. That's why samadhi paccayata buddhi yana dasana, from samadhi, from stillness, you see things as they really are. At the very least, you see what happiness truly is. And if that's all one gets out of monastic life, that's huge. In fact, if you know what happiness really is, you'll be a stream winner. Because happiness, real happiness, is nirvana. Nirvanang paramang sukhang. But the point is here that in our world, in our life, people are motivated by the search for happiness. It makes you do what you want, what you are habitually doing. It makes you talk in that way, think in that way, act in that way. Searching for your happiness in the world. It makes you run away from things you don't like. It makes you argue. It makes you upset. And a lot of times that we think, where are we ever going to find this happiness? And one day you sit down, you really let go, and you find all the happiness you could ever dream of, and much more as well. That can blow the mind, in the sense it blows the old views of what is real happiness in this world. I have a lot of fun going overseas and saying that meditation is better than sex. I have a lot of fun there because you really challenge what to many people is the highest happiness in this world, sex. And there you go and say something completely different. And people challenge you. And you say that's true. You can say according to experience it's true. And you encourage other people to go to those states and you'll find out, yeah, it is true. The point there is you're finding about what true happiness is. Or at least you're getting closer to the powerful happinesses of the deep meditations. The Buddha said that those meditations, he called it not just Nekama Sukha, the happiness of renunciation. Also Sambodhi Sukha, enlightenment happiness. So that happiness is so close to the bliss of Nibbana. It's got that title by the Buddha, Sambodhi Sukha. So maybe when you get to a jhana, people say you can't get insight into jhana, but you're experiencing in that very state a happiness which the Buddha equated to enlightenment, Sambodhi. You're getting some incredibly profound data which the mind will analyze later on. So it's from these samadhi states you get the understanding of what happiness truly is. And it's not just an intellectual understanding which makes you just write books and argue with your friends about what real happiness is. Because this is experiential on one of the most profoundest of levels. Because the deeper in peace you get, the more sensitive is your mind. And you're very sensitive. I used the term years ago, it's almost these jhanas are traumatic. Trauma is used mostly for very intense, unpleasant experiences. And it's interesting in the English language, there's no real words for the effect of intense, blissful experiences. But that's what happens with the jhanas, intense bliss. And that leaves an indelible mark on the mind. The one thing it leaves is, my goodness, this was really amazing bliss. Why? First of all, because of that, you'll incline towards the causes again and again and again. You'll incline towards letting go, freedom. You'll incline towards keeping precepts because you understand just how important that is for gaining that bliss and that happiness. You'll incline towards restraint. You'll incline towards letting go. You know the causes for this great bliss. And of course, you will go back there. You can't stop yourself. That's what insight, seeing things as they truly are, leading to nibbida, turning away from that which blocks you from those states, which lead to those states fading away, viraga, which leads to them ceasing. So the obstacles to deep meditation are seen to disappear. It's a whole process of insight. Insight isn't just an idea. Insight is a cause for another consequence. And its consequence, its function, what insight is supposed to do, is to turn you away from the world. It's supposed to cause nibbida. what I said a few months ago is samsara's ejection seat, or ejection button, pushing you away from the wheel. And so when we do get in these samadhi states, insight happens as a natural course. Sometimes people say, oh, after the samadhi, then you've got to go and you do insight, anicca, dukkha, anatta, or rise and fall or whatever. My goodness, this happens naturally. You don't have to sort of start doing something, because there's a cause and effect. It's not up to you. It happens. As long as you've got decent instructions, it will happen. You'll look back and see why. Why was that not just the deepest experience which will affect the mind, which will recondition the mind, which will make the mind want to meditate more and more and more? Not only that, but you'll start to ask why. Where did this happiness come from? And the mind understands from letting go. This is what happiness is. And you understand because you've done an experience there. You've walked a path. You've gone on a journey. And you know from the results you've gone to the city of letting go, the jhana realms. And now you understand what letting go is. Letting go is not a theory. It's not a sort of a word you can look up in a dictionary, because in a dictionary it's just explained by other words. It's just finding a signpost by other signposts, but never actually going to where those signposts are really pointing to. It's going round in a circle. But here, you've actually gone to what letting go, what that word means. You've gone to the experience, the thing itself. You know that for sure, because you've experienced the effect. It's almost going backwards. If there is a jhana there, then letting go has happened. So look backwards and see how that jhana came about. Trace your steps backwards. That is letting go. And this is what we mean by insight, by experiential insight and understanding into what this wonderful word letting go is. And what is the place of letting go in Buddhism? It is exactly the third noble truth. You've got insight into what dukkha nirodha is, what letting go is, what jaga, patinisaga, mutti, analaya, the four types of letting go are. You know, the generosity, giving, expecting nothing back in return, that's letting go, no expectation. Patinisaga, the ability to throw things away, to eject. Mutti, this freedom gained from contentment, just happy to be here, not doing anything. And analaya, just a Teflon mind, is my translation for that. Nothing sticks. You're letting go, and you've done that letting go, and you get insight into what that means. That is priceless, have the insight into how to let go. Because so many times in your life you'll be stuck, or almost stuck, like the raft gets stuck on the reeds as it goes along the river towards Nibbana, using the Buddhist simile. But sometimes that you have to push yourself off, find a way of overcoming those obstructions, those stickiness of life. And it's always through letting go. And sometimes if we don't know how to let go, we get into all sorts of strife. Someone abuses us, shouts in our ear. We don't know how to let it go. It's not another person's fault if you're unhappy in this monastery. You should never blame somebody else, no matter what they say or do to you. It's only yourself who makes the mistake. You're transferring the cause of suffering from you to them. You should never allow anyone to control your happiness, because really it's not their business. He abused me. He hit me. He beat me. Anger never ceases in one who harbors such thoughts. You let go of those thoughts, and then the anger ceases. This is just an example of how we have to let go. People can really abuse you and do completely the wrong thing, and they shouldn't have done that. They should have been there at that time. Why did they leave me with all that work? It's unfair. Just shut up. If you carry on such mind states like that, you don't know how to let go. You'll suffer, suffer, suffer. So we have to learn, even in monastic life, how to let go of these things. It doesn't matter what anybody did. It's the past. I'm going to let go of the whole lot, no matter who you are, what you said, what you did. And if you can do that, you understand how you can become free. You can become free from the defiled actions and words of other beings. If you don't know how to let go that much, you'll always be under the control, under the influence of the stupidity and ignorance of other beings. What a terrible thing that is, because there's no end of stupid and ignorant other beings. There's no end of people who will call you names, who will abuse you, who will mistreat you, who will abuse your trust, who won't do the right thing. There's no end of beings like that. You can't train them all. You can't run away from them all. What you can do is just let them go. And don't carry them on your shoulders. Let go. So you're learning about what this letting go truly is. In the deep meditations, you've done something. You've let go. Let go of the past, let go of the future. And the experience is the insight. Ah, that's what letting go is. And once you've done that many times and have the understanding, then you're getting close to being on the path. If you're not on the path already, sometimes people ask, you know, stream winning, yeah, we know what that is. But on the path of being a stream winner, what actually is that? If you understand the path towards Nibbana, the path of the Lord Buddha is the path of abandoning, letting go, the third noble truth. Once you've started getting into this letting go business, and you've had enough success in letting go, then it's inevitable that the mind will be conditioned by the beautiful, peaceful, happy results, by its remembering of what freedom truly was when you let go, to keep repeating that again and again and again. When the ball of letting go starts rolling, it can't be stopped. It's not you keeps it going. It's not someone else who can stop it. It's just cause and effect. The mind has seen letting go. It's had the insight. And Nibbida just happens. You turn away a little bit from the world. These things fade away, they cease. There's more happiness. You turn away a bit more. There's more letting go. Turn away a bit more. As the happiness increases, bliss upon bliss upon bliss. This is the bliss which is born of insight, which works backwards and makes samadhi even more simple. Sometimes people would ask, they can understand how to measure your samadhi. You need to tell whether you're getting into deep states of mind or even jhanas. But how can you tell whether your insight is getting stronger and stronger? Are you really developing insight in this monastery? What's the gauge and what's the measure? The gauge of insight is not your ability to quote from the suttas. There's other people who can do probably much better than you. Your ability is not to be able to give Dharma talks which inspire other people. That's not the gauge of your insight. The measure of your insight is your ability to be peaceful. Because that's what insight is supposed to do. It's supposed to create Nibbida turning away, Viraga fading away, Nirodha, things ceasing, which leads to peace and stillness. That's what the sign of insight truly is. So people who get insight and get angry at others, that's not insight, that's just thinking, just concepts, ideas. People who get insight and just want to go here and leave and do this and do that, that's not insight, that's just making more restlessness, more coming and going. People who get insight and are just so content and still and peaceful, That's the sign. That's the insight. That's seeing things as they truly are. The sign of insight is calm. The sign of calm is insight. That's why the two go together. So as one practices this way, the insight leads to more calm. The calm leads to more insight. That's why they truly do dance together on the path towards liberation. Liberation, that's another word for letting go. Liberation comes from seeing things as they truly are. And it's not an intellectual thing. Little by little you see all your possessions. What do you need them for? Even your body, what's the point of that? You can let them go with more ease as you gain insight that there's a happiness. A greater happiness comes when you abandon than when you try to collect things. Even as spiritual materialism, we're trying to gain brownie points on the path and just see how long I can fast or see just how many chants I can do. I can chant the Patimokkha. I can chant the Patimokkha faster than anyone else. I make less mistakes. Blah, blah, blah. Or I can sort of sit much longer. I can sit for 2 hours. How many hours can you sit? Oh, you can only sit for 1.5 hours. You're hopeless. I can walk meditation for 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours. Be careful of those spiritual materialism measurings. When you really let go, you don't count the hours. You don't count the moments. You're letting go of things like that. And the more you let go, the more free you feel. You do let go of judging other people. Ajahn Chah would always say that you look at yourself at the minimum 90% of the time. Other people maybe, I think he said 95. Other people 5% of the time. That's at most, maximum. The point was you let go of others. Your concern is with this 5 khandhas with which you're sitting. That's the cause of your suffering, not other beings. So you let go of other people and measuring others. You let go of possessions. You even let go of this monastery. You let go of concern as you sit in your hut. When you let go, you get happiness. And you gain the insight into this letting go, into this abandoning, into this path. You get insight into what's the path and what's not the path. Now they have all these insight knowledges in the Abhidharma or in the commentaries. But you never see those in the suttas, except maybe Ratapala. No, not Ratta, Ratta Vinita, or Vinita Ratta Sutta or something. But even that is just an approximation. It's not the only way which insight arises. From the deep meditations, you gain the insights. But not just the insights into what's happiness and what isn't happiness. You gain the insight into the deeper things as well. Because in particular, you gain the insight into what is this opposite of letting go, this doing, this controlling business. And this is where we get the powerful insights, the ones which lead to enlightenment. How can you I've said a lot about this doing business, but you really can't understand completely what I'm talking about until you've gained a jhana, really until you've gained a second jhana. Because it's only then when the doer completely disappears. That's a fantastic experience. Fantastic because it cannot be imagined what these deep jhanas are like. You're sitting there and just you cannot move. The potential to do is completely removed. I'll give examples like that, but obviously it's just very different than the real experience. When the doer it's completely disappeared. What happens then is afterwards the insight is just almost sort of unmistakable. I can't see just how anybody who's heard the Buddha's teachings can fail to understand that the doer, the will, the chaitanya, that which you take to be your controller, one of the great citadels of the illusion of a self, how it's completely disappeared and the illusion is shattered. I don't know how you could ever take yourself to be the one who's in control of all of this, the doer, the will, when you've achieved a second jhana. Because that thing which you thought was a continuous essence of yourself, the ability to choose, to be in control, to do, the thing you were so afraid of losing. You know, my control, my doing, my will, I'm in charge. I've got my rights to do this and to do that. That thing which you've been protecting has been taken away. And consciousness is still there. Awareness is still there. But that consciousness and that awareness is even more blissed out. And you really realize what a pain this doer is. This thing which you cultivated and cherished as such an important part of your ego, yourself. The cause of all your praise and blame. You praise yourself because you think you did that. You blame yourself because you think you messed up. If ever you see me as being non-critical and not sort of praising you or blaming you, sometimes I praise you because that's more, it works better. The reason you don't control anybody is because you understand essentially just the nature of this control in beings and just how it causes. It's the house builder, it's craving, it's the fuel which gives rise to more rebirths. In particular, the doer. And so just gaining these deep samadhi states, from that samadhi of the second jhana, you will see things as they truly are. You'll see the emptiness of the doer. You see, it is just a process, a complex web of cause and effect, which makes you do and think and say and comment on things. Why you react? It's just a complex web of causes, but it's not coming from a self, from a me. And you see that so clearly because it's gone, it's vanished. Once you see that, of course, you'll see things as they truly are. You are not in control. There is not a self in there which is saying, oh, may my body be like this, may my Vedana be like this, may my thoughts, may my consciousness be like this. You see that so clearly after the second jhana experience. Oh, how on earth afterwards are you going to sort of get into that trap again of controlling your thoughts, controlling your consciousness, controlling your body or your feelings? Vedanas come, Vedanas go. There's happiness, now suffering. That's the nature of things, and it's completely out of control. Freedom at last to know there's no happiness in this world. Rather, freedom at last to know I can't control happiness. I can't make it happen. I can't make my samadhi happen. I can't make myself get into jhanas. I can't make enlightenment happen. How many of you are trying to become enlightened? How many of you are forcing your way into jhanas? How many of you have been meditating for years and still haven't got a jhana yet? Do you understand why? Because you're trying to do away with the doer. You're trying to do away with the doer. It's just more doing. The dog chasing the tail. You can never catch it. You can never sort of quite let go, because you're trying to do the letting go. Little by little, he sort of finds out the cause and the reason. You get the insight, you see clearly, and then you know what letting go is. And once you know what letting go is, you do that letting go, you're free from the doer, you get the big insight. And goodness, that doing business, that's been torturing me for such a long time. It is very much like that simile of Ajahn Chah's about the two men with the string around one's neck. The two men, desire and aversion. It's all different types of doing. It's pulling you so tight. The doer is strangling you, stopping you achieving the freedom of the jhanas, stopping you letting go. But somehow or other, you manage to loosen that string. You can breathe. like Veno Satimanto, just telling me just how awful it is not to be able to get a breath when he was having the pneumonia or the trouble with his breathing. Just how wonderful it is to breathe at last. Oh, what bliss. That's what the freedom of giving up the dua is like. This is the insight which leads to freedom. And the freedom is joyful, it's bliss. That's why that one thing which I promised many of you in your interviews, I say to you that those people who come here for their first year, this is your first year in this monastery, this is the worst retreat you'll ever experience, because next year will be better. If you follow the path, it gets better and better, more and more joyful, more and more freedom, more and more insight, more and more wisdom. The sign of insight is the joy, the peace. The sign of peace is the understanding. And it's an understanding which you can employ, which works, which is not just there to write a book or to argue with people. You use insight. Insight, it's not you use it, it just insight causes more peace. And this is what happens as one sees that this dua is just a process, big deal. Of course, it's much easier to let go. Why is it that the anagamis, the non-returners, have no problem at all attaining jhana? It's because they know how to let go. Their identification with this dua, this thing which stops the sort of the letting go, is seen. And of course, that's a big obstacle there. When you attach to the dua, by attachment I mean that's such an essential part of yourself, you can't let it completely go. Because letting it completely go is as if you are going. As if the sense of self, the thing which you guard and cherish most of all, even more than your physical possessions, is your ability to be in control and call the shots. When you see that that's just a process, it's empty of a reality, then, of course, it's much easier to let it go. Let it go whenever you want. Just say stop, and it stops. That's why it's easy to gain those jhanas for the non-returner. That's why the insight leads to samadhi. Samadhi leads to insight. They go together, which is what is in the path. So as you develop these deeper and deeper meditations, deeper and deeper calms, you will get insights. You'll get insights just cascading into your mind. But be careful, because there comes that time in meditation when you are very peaceful and you're about to gain a nimitta and people just go thinking. It's called Dhamma Vitakka, the lingering obstacle, I think it was translated as in the old translation of the Anguttara, the lingering obstacle to jhanas, to deep samadhi. That is not insight. Be careful. Just when your mind gets very strong, when the hindrances are almost gone, they're not gone yet, there's too much restlessness, but the hindrances are almost gone, very often you can start thinking. Thinking so powerfully, so deeply, you can mistake that for insight. This is where, when the mind is in samadhi, you can contemplate what you think is Dhamma. You can even give yourself a most brilliant Dhamma talk. You can go on for minutes, sometimes hours. And the Buddha pointed that out. That is not insight. That should be abandoned. That's an obstacle. Get the jhana first, and then you can start contemplating. Because if you get the deeper states, the cause of restlessness, the dua, is seen. It's as if those jhanas, using that soul simile of the lotus, the thousand petal lotus, you need at least first jhana, because outside of that, the petals are too thick to see what's right in the center. At least in the jhanas, the four jhanas and the four immaterial, they are very gossamer thin. They're very refined. Even from the first jhana, you can actually see through those closed petals to see the emptiness which is inside. You've already seen the emptiness of the doer. The only thing left is the emptiness of the knower. Because in the middle of the lotus, the stage after neither perception nor non-perception is the cessation of consciousness, the end of things, the end of knowing. At least that much one can see, that the knowing is also not a self. It's impermanent. Even knowing is suffering. It's one thing which is said, all consciousness is suffering. It's why the Bhikkhuni Wajira, when asked by Mara who she thought she was, said, as an arahat, this is just suffering arising and suffering passing away. Repeated in a Kacchanagota Sutta by the Lord Buddha himself. This, five khandhas, that's all it is, suffering arising and suffering passing away. And that's all he taught through his whole life, just the Buddha talk about suffering and the end of suffering. When you actually get to those deep stages and insight arises, you see that's all there is, suffering arising and suffering passing away. It's just so powerful teaching of the Buddha. He didn't make it complicated, didn't sort of analyze it into so many hundreds and thousands of ways like Abhidhammas or whatever else does. That's what it is like. And if one can let go, if one can, through samadhi, gain that insight of seeing the way things truly are, there's no self in here, there's nothing to keep attaching to. There is no one to do the attaching. This is what happens. That simile of the raft going across. It's not as if you suddenly decide to carry the raft or not to carry the raft. There's no. It's as if you go across that on that raft of the Eightfold Path. By the time you get to the other side, the person on the raft has mostly vanished. There's no one actually to carry the raft anymore. There's no one to throw it away. Everything is gone. It's when that self, the me, the doer, the knower, the one you think you are, that illusion is completely abandoned. Then there's a complete freedom. This is the insight which one gets. The insight into non-self, the emptiness of a self. Fascinating that through the power of the jhanas, through the data there, so much which you thought you were is seen to be false. The data contradicts it. The experience shows that cannot be. You can't miss it. That's why the jhanas are frightening. They're overturning ideas, conceptions which you thought were so powerful, so true, so stable, which seems so obvious to you. That's why argument and discussion cannot work, cannot overcome the delusions of avijja. You need powerful, deep experience of those states to shatter and break, explode those old ways of thinking. That's why the Eightfold Path culminates in samadhi. And in the Anguttara we have two more factors from samadhi. One has, what is it? Sammavimutti. I think it's Sammavimutti Jnana afterwards. Sammavimutti. Correct freedom. Liberation. You're liberated from the illusion of a self. Imagine what that's like. To understand the doer has nothing to do with you. It's just a process. That's where will comes from. And the knower, it's just consciousness rising and passing away into nothingness and rising out of nothingness again. There's no storehouse of consciousness, there's no underlying bhavanga. It's just momentary experience. Seeing this, when one sees this, of course, it's very easy then to let it go. When there's nothing there, of course letting go happens. How can you hold on to nothing? There's no one there to do the holding on either. Letting go happens. There's no fuel left to keep a sense of a self or a person going from life to life. Samsara is unraveling. The knower and the known are all let go of. This is what it means by the fading away of the world. The fading away of the world outside and inside. That which knows and the known fade away until they finally cease. Beautiful word of the Buddha, Nirodha, cessation. Scary to people without insight. When one has insight, it's one of the most beautiful words. It means there is an end of suffering. That yes, suffering arose. Suffering passes away for this whole lifetime. But there will come a time when these five khandhas of suffering will one day just cease without remainder, gone forever. What a beautiful idea. For those with no insight, that seems like annihilationism. That seems crazy. See, what the heck do you want to do that for? This only means a limitation of your insight, not seeing things clearly. So the challenge is, no need to argue from the text, no need to argue from what the Kubara Ajahns say, no need to argue from reason. I think the Buddha said this is something which is not to be hammered out by mere reason. It's to be experienced, each wise one for themselves. And it's experienced through the deep meditations. So you have the path there. And we're talking in this way. It is insight. If you're doing insight meditation, you have to create the causes for insight. And the cause for insight is jhanas, samasamadhi. Of course, that's a big insight. Little insights help with samadhi. But I'm here this evening talking about the biggies. Getting those huge insights, which will change your life forever. Will actually start you exiting from this round of rebirths. So all that suffering and pain is gone. That's the only way out of suffering and pain. Otherwise you're going to keep getting reborn again and again. And all the pain and trouble you've had so far in this rains retreat, with this person or that person, with yourself, with life, with the kitchen, with the whatever it is, you have to repeat that. Haven't you had enough yet? If you haven't had enough and you think there's some other way, you're just going to waste your time. I think each one of you should have enough insight to know this is the way. It's not I'm trying to keep more people here. I'd actually be happy if a few people leave to give space for other people to come. But the fact is that this is the way to end suffering. Gain those jhanas. Afterwards, it's just a matter of course. You'll see them for what they truly are. And so much of the illusion will just break away. Maybe you have to get them a few times, maybe many times if you're dull. But certainly the information is there. The Dharma is staring you in your face for hours at a time. If you can't see that, you have to see that, because cause and effect. And then you start to liberate yourself. Insight, seeing clearly into anicca dukkha anatta, things which you thought were solid, completely fading away. So that anicca, I never mentioned too much about that, but the simile which I gave in those little books, anicca, not just things, not just the waves on the ocean going up and going down, but the whole ocean disappearing. I'm actually quite happy with that simile, because that's what it's like. You're watching this big body of water, and just like today when I went to a funeral, just going past the Swan River, it was very windy today, so there's lots of waves on where the Canning and the Swan meet together at the Narrows. But you're just watching those waves, up and down, That is superficial anicca. But then one day you're watching those waves and the whole water disappears. The banks, the land which surrounds it, the sky above it just all goes and vanishes. And that freaks you out. And the body goes, the senses disappear, the thoughts vanish, and the doer just has completely gone and vanished. That is freaky and scary. What it shows is that body of water, the river, the sky, the mountains were just all delusion. Just a concept which one took for granted because it's always been that way. But now it's completely gone. That is what changes the way you see things. That is where you start to see things as they truly are. That is where enlightenment happens. And that's there for you during this ranger tree. Just stop messing around. Do it properly. Samadhi pachaya yata bhuti yana dasana. It's only through samadhi that you will see things as they truly are. And the sign of seeing things as they truly are, nibbida, towards the world, towards this body, just not interested anymore. Things fade away and things cease. The world stops. You stop. Birth stops. And finally suffering stops. So talk this evening.
Pano Bhagavato Sāma.